Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Waldman's Words. I'm Emily Burke. We have Jed Fuchs. We have Scott Waldman. And today as our guest, we have Nick Cianfione, who's not here yet, but will be here.
Woo! Shout out to Marilyn for making this happen. We appreciate you.
We do appreciate you. We love when people have publicists. You know, they're very nice and on top of it. And we also really like Nick as a guest and as a person. He was cool.
I still think it's amazing that this show was started just before Trump took in office. And we got to the point where publicists hit us up. So that's a humble brag, and I'll fucking do it.
Mega humble brag, especially because this publicist hit you up for Nick Cianfione. It's like, he was a real badass.
He was like a real hardworking CEO. I usually cringe when I see that CEO on LinkedIn, but I didn't with him. And Artist Republic is a really, really cool company, and hopefully pretty soon I'll have some direct experience with it.
Yeah.
CEO on LinkedIn doesn't bug me, but A&R. Entrepreneur on a Tinder profile.
Ooh. What do you say on Tinder?
I did at the beginning of lockdown. Both my boyfriend and I downloaded Tinder because you could do the passport option for free. And so we wanted to see if we could find each other in Arkansas.
Wait. I mean, I know this Nick show is happening soon, but what the hell are you talking about?
Okay, so Tinder, if you don't know, has a passport option. So you could swipe in any city in the world, and usually you have to pay a fee for it. But who the hell pays for Tinder? So when lockdown first happened, they just gave every Tinder profile passport for free. And we were so bored, and we were long distance at the time. So we both downloaded Tinder. We both used the passport option, and we tried to find each other in different cities.
Come on, Scott.
I'm just old school Tinder, where I met my wife in 2014 on it, and we didn't go on for any weird ulterior motive. So anyway, Nick, thank you so much for doing this show. I really, really enjoyed talking to you with Jed and Emily, and we've spoken actually a few times since, and I just believe in your company. I believe in you, and I hope that the people listening to this story maybe have an idea in the back of their head that they want to kickstart.
Yeah, exactly.
That was really sincere. Sorry, guys.
We got real sincere for a second. No, that's why it's nice having people who are like on the straight up business side of the music industry. Like, he's not even like managing artists. He's going like one step ahead, because we have a lot of people on the show who give good insight, but this is like straight up educational.
Speaking of
if you're looking for a degree in music,
my wife is using our shared printer as we're on here, showing you that business never stops in the fucking Waldman house.
It's just
never ends.
But it's good. If you're looking for an education in music, you can't afford to miss this episode of Waldman's Words. I'm just saying.
Wow. Do you write taglines for a living?
Only for you. It's also fun hearing from people how they got their start, like in their teenage years. We always ask what people's high school bands were called, but instead Nick has the story of like throwing raves at age 16 and putting up thousands as still a child, which I'll let him tell the story in a couple minutes, but always cool to hear.
Age is but a number, you know? If you have the drive, if you have the will, and if you have the support, you could do anything whenever you want.
Well, he was doing way cooler shit than I was in high school. I was taking a bus to the mall and eating bourbon chicken.
Plus, it was a mall in Long Island, so.
Hey, Roosevelt Field Mall sells so much stuff. I know it's got the biggest Urban Outfitters in the world.
Wow.
I think I was a pretty cool teenager, but definitely not as cool as Nick was, as you will learn in this episode. Speaking of which, this episode is coming up really quick right after this commercial break. We only have 15 more seconds. So anyone have anything left to say?
Don't forget to check us out on Twitch the hour before this show airs, 4 p.m. Pacific every Tuesday. Twitch.tv/Waldman's Words.
I got nothing.
Right. Stick around. Stay tuned. For this new episode.
What's up, guys? Welcome here to Waldman's Words here on Adobe Radio. That's your host, Scott Waldman. We're your co-hosts, Emily Burke and Jed Fuchs. Today on the show, we have Nick Cianfione, CEO and founder of Artist Republic. Thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Now, we're going to walk through how you got to where you are today. We're going to hear the origin story, the prequel trilogy. Then we want to hear a little bit more about what you have going on now and how you guys are thriving in this dumpster fire of a year we got going on here. But first, I want to hear just like a 30-second overview of Artist Republic. Can you tell us really, really, really quick what you do?
Yeah, two-second power rundown. Artist Republic is basically the largest network, digital network for independent artists. So basically what it does is it empowers an independent artist to drop the contracts, drop the managers, drop the record labels, kind of say F the music industry and say, okay, I can do it on my own. And we basically present them with all the resources and structure and, you know, things they need to succeed, without contracts, hidden fees, gatekeepers, and all the BS that, you know, the industry has been built on for the past 100, 200 years.
Oh, yeah.
So have you been reading the Kanye tweets?
I have, actually. The Kanye tweets is an interesting topic because we've been paying attention to them a lot. And I actually, after this, I actually have a call with one of my, part investors and close buddies. And I was talking to him the other day. I was like, yo, should we get Kanye involved?
Yes.
And, there's been a, that's a big thing with us is, you know, we like to build the platform around, you know, with working with other artists that have the same mission as us. I think the Kanye tweets is great because it kind of just shows like artists
what mental illness can do.
Yes. Oh. Yes, definitely what mental illness can do. It's great. Like everyone's done. Everyone is so done with the music industry, and it's kind of just perfect timing for us to kind of just be like, hey, we're here. We're here to help you say F the old white dude in the suit that doesn't really care about your music career anymore.
I mean, yeah. I'm gonna provide a counter argument because I am a manager and also because I have a semblance of reality. So what Kanye did would have been fine had he not actually attached the contracts.
I totally agree with that.
You destroy your cause because that's privileged information. And so anyone who would even contemplate doing business with him would probably be scared the fuck off.
Wait, yeah. I think I only saw the intros. He attached people's contracts to the later one?
His own 117 pages of his Universal contract is out there.
Yay.
It's our modern day Reynolds pamphlet. It's amazing. Honestly, yes, it was illegal for him to do. Not cool, made him look bad. But if you are interested in how this industry works as of now and what these artists are dealing with, highly, highly recommend reading as much as you can of that contract, just so you know what goes down and what is actually happening. As a manager, I like how some of the music industry works, but I like that Kanye did this in the sense of it is perfect timing just because the industry as we know it is gone. We can't do it. So exactly. I think right now is the shift.
Because he wasn't on the ballot.
Yeah.
So it happened to coincide with that. But here's the thing. This is not about Kanye West. This is about Nick. And even though you kind of are a competitor to Emily and I, because we're artist managers and screw you and what the fuck is wrong with me? I would love to hear about the genesis of you being into music.
Yeah. So two things. Kind of quick statement. I got a lot of buddies that are managers and stuff of that sort. And it's an interesting standpoint. Where we like to say we don't want to, because there's a lot of managers that actually use Artist Republic and a lot of, agencies that rely on us and work with us. And it's an interesting balance because when we built the network, which kind of goes into the genesis, is we conducted 500 plus interviews with artists across the world. And there was basically these interviews helped us figure out how and what artists want on the network. And one of the big things we found was that artists don't want to be self-managed forever. They want to have a manager. And so the key with Artists Republic is we really want to build it in a way where it gives, you know, when you start succeeding, where it gives you the option. So, you know, if you guys want to come to the table and you're like, oh, I got, you know, I found this independent artist and they're killing it. Now, when you guys hand that artist a contract, now that artist isn't going to feel like they have to take that deal or they're going to die. Where now they're in an area where they can be like, okay, you know, I've got some consistent growth on my own through Artists Republic. I continue growing. And then, you know, then they can be like, okay, you know what? Yeah, I do want a manager. I do want a manager to help me on some of this stuff. Because even like I say, the difference between an independent artist and a non-independent artist is who pays the contract. And what I really mean by that is like we work closely with Hobson, and Hobson is, you know, in all terms an independent artist, but he is a manager. But his manager works for him. And
everyone's
so
manager works for them.
Exactly. But there are, and I've seen this in some areas, especially on the lower side of the industry, where you do have artists that almost do kind of work for the manager. There's some interesting standpoints. And that's where my background came from. I came from the bottom of the music industry. I started out in the music industry when I was in high school, hosting concerts, and you know, worked my way up from there. And so I've seen a lot of the really sketchy, crappy bottom end of the industry, that really, you know, artists are locked into these contracts and locked into these things with bad managers or bad booking agents, and they can't get out of it. And I've had multiple buddies of mine that have, you know, messaged me over the years and been like, hey, I got screwed into a record contract. You know, I don't know what to do here. And, you know, that's really what Artists Republic tries to come in and help is, you know, we want to build a ecosystem that benefits everybody. And, you know, we're really not trying to, quote unquote, compete with anybody unless you're in the music tech space. Then we're
coming. Right. In which case, watch out. We're coming for you.
In which case, you know, we're you're watching us.
We're
watching. When it comes to like agencies and you know stuff like that, we a lot of times we're working together on it and kind of just building a better system for you know growth and management.
Well, now I really feel like I've gotten a great overview of what's going on. He's like, all right, it's the 2-second overview. No, he's too passionate about what he does.
That was an elevator pitch in an elevator that was broken, but I love it.
But now I feel like I've got this great overture to your life. I feel like we've got a really good opening sequence where we know where we are today, and then the screen goes black and it says 20 years ago or many moons ago, not to age you. Let's go back to the very beginning. Yes. So tell us at Chalker Beach Boy, where are you from originally?
So I grew up in Madison, Connecticut. And then, you know, always grew up, my family all grew up at a, you know, beach in Old Saybrook called Chalker Beach, which is why when you find me on Instagram, my Instagram name is Chalker Beach Boy. Made it in eighth grade, then started getting too much of a following and then was like, fuck, I can't change this. And like people call me Chalker Beach. It's weird. Like I've literally met people that like don't know my name. They're like, oh my God, Chalker Beach Boy. I'm like, oh, that's weird.
People call me Waldman's Words and yeah. I'm not upset.
I was at Big Y getting groceries with my girlfriend. And someone was like, yo, you're that Chalker Beach Boy kid, right? And I was like, fuck.
That's some recognition, but I just want to talk about the East Coast quickly because I'm from the East Coast as well. Were you going to local shows in the state of Connecticut? And if so, what city?
Yes. Yeah, so I hosted concerts across Connecticut. And I worked at where we worked with Oakdale. We worked with Totes Place. We worked with There was a 3-venue set up in Hamden that we had some of our biggest contracts at, which I love that because they were a smaller venue. And so they had a 200-cap venue, a 150-cap venue, and a 500-cap venue. And they used to just hand us contracts left and right. Like, we pretty much owned that place. So we worked all around there. I had a little bit of experience down in Danbury. But when I was starting in the industry was when the venues in Danbury were going down. So didn't have too much experience there. But yeah, so that's kind of, where I came from around there. I by the time I graduated high school, I hosted about 65 concerts across Connecticut. And worked on a bunch of them. Yeah, it was a hell of a ride.
Do you play any instruments?
I do not. I like to say I think I got into the music industry as the, music business side because I'm a musical person, but I think I just suck at it. I actually went to my first 2 years of high school. I actually was at theater art school in New Haven. So I actually was going to a, theater art school, for the first 2 years of high school, I was always involved in, different music stuff, theater stuff all through, my childhood thinking that like, that's what it was, that I wanted to do. And then it's funny, I look back at it and I'm like, no, it wasn't. I was a business person from heart. I had a duct tape wallet empire in fifth grade. Like, how did I never realize this?
Yeah, I was kind of the same way. I can't play an instrument. I can't sing. I just kind of like, I also have the theater, like musical theater background and everything too. And I think that's kind of where it started. And then obviously in high school, you have a little bit more freedom. You go out, you find shows, you join the local scene. I was lucky in the sense of one, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. So I lived my teenage years in LA going to shows. And two, I was homeschooled my last 2 years of high school. So 17 and 18. And being a 17/18-year-old in Los Angeles with like total freedom, not having to go to school in the morning. Amazing. Loved it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I'm still alive.
Homeschool
is?
What?
Homeschool is just whatever you want it to be. Should I have done homeschool?
I only had to go into like my school for 1 hour every 2 days.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a rough schedule, man. That's
so hard.
But Nick, what bands were you listening to when you were doing this in high school? And props to you for having, I guess, foreshadowment of your future when you were really young.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I hosted my first concert, I was like, and I just held the money in my hand from it. I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Like the feeling of, well, so not the first concert. The first concert was a complete fail. But the second concert I had was a complete sold out concert. And I was just sitting there as like this 15-year-old holding like $8,000 in cash. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, I literally want to do this for the rest of my life. Like, this is sick. And I mean, it was attractive. Like, obviously, you guys know, like, the show industry for a younger person, it's sexy. Like, I've been in rooms of shit going on that, like, my mom would kill me. And, like, I always said that to her. I was like, I don't know how you let your 15-year-old be downstairs in the green room at Toad's Place, which, like, I don't know. You guys probably know, like, whoever's been in Connecticut, like, Toad's Place has been around for 50 years. And it's crazy. Like, it's not a clean venue. there's a hot tub in the green room. It's, like, probably has every STD imaginable.
Connecticut. I would never have thought.
And, like, obviously, I never went in a hot tub. But, like, you know, here's little Nick at, like, 15 who's hosting an 18-plus concert that he can't even technically go to. And he's hosting it. And, like, he's with, like, I was strong in a lot of the EDM concerts. And it's, like, I'm downstairs. And, like, you know, at that time, you know, you had all, like, the hype girl dancers and, like, all this stuff. I'm, like, they're all, like, 20-plus. And here's me, 15. And they're, you know, taking shots, doing drugs. And I'm just, like, here. Like, I'm, like, how... why? But you know, it was sexy, and I got involved in it, and I was addicted to it. I loved it. And it just kept growing from there.
Have you booked anyone that, or that we would know about? Like, what would you consider yourself? Were you like a club promoter or like a talent? Hmm. Like, what was your exact role?
So there's a couple things. So one thing is the biggest money maker that we had, we'd host these concerts at the three setup venue in Hamden. The biggest money maker, it was guaranteed every single night, 200 people, you would walk away with $3,500 profit, guaranteed. It was like taking money from a baby. But literally, I was in high school. I knew the high school crowd. Every other Thursday night, we'd host a 16-plus glow party at this freaking venue. And it was just guaranteed sellouts. And then I took
the bus, you said? Yeah. So, yep. Like, people in, like, middle of 10th grade could go?
Yeah. Yep. Yep, exactly. But it was funny. Like, it was funny because, like, those are the people that want to be older than they are. And they can't get into 18 plus. They can't get into 21 plus. They want to be older than they are. They go to these concerts. And you just sell them an experience that would be the same experience at an 18 plus event. And do they pay? Tickets were $25 a pop. And you know, parents were just like, here's $25, get out of the house for the night. And so then we would take that money and we would just reinvest. So we would then host college nights. We would host, did a bunch of like, local and regional DJ acts. We did a bunch of local regional rap shows. We really were making significant amount of money on the local industry because no one provided that. Now being involved in the local industry, then I was able to get the experience of working on bigger shows. So like probably one of the biggest ones that we got pulled in on was Tilt, which is a, you know, college, you know, transactional money spending app. They hosted a big tour and UConn won. And so they hosted the Chainsmokers at Oakdale. And this was like right when the Chainsmokers were coming up. And so at this point I was a junior in high school. And I got an email one night from them that was the local person. They're like, hey, we need a local liaison on this show. We've never been to Connecticut. We don't know the artist realm. We don't know how the best security contractors and all this stuff. So they basically reached out to me and we worked on that. And then we were supposed to bring on another Tilt tour the year later, but Tilt just never did the tour again. So that was probably the biggest one I worked on as in like, name brands, but there was a lot I worked on at Toads that were, you know, quote unquote bigger artists, but a lot of hard EDM. Connecticut has a really deep underground EDM industry.
Yeah. Cool. And it's, you know, nearby NYC. So, yep. You know, exactly. You're not removed from that whole scene. Exactly. Now, I didn't want to date you earlier. I didn't want to age you earlier, but now I do. What year was all of this going down?
So I started it. My first concert I hosted was my freshman year in high school. I came off of, as you know, like we like talked about before, public knowledge. I came off of losing my dad from cancer when I was in eighth grade. And at that point, I was involved in Relay for Life. And so I had the Relay for Life team, and it was my freshman year. And, this girls' team was smacking us across the face. And I was like, guys, we can't lose. I was like, these girls hosted a wine night. I was like, we can't lose to that. And everyone was like, yo, let's do a bake sale or a car wash. I was like, let's throw a party. Let's just do it. Let's throw a party. Let's charge money to get in. And so May of my freshman year, I hosted my first ever concert. It's called Club for Cancer. And we charged $15, rented out a venue. 30 people showed up. Happened to be that we scheduled it 6 months out and I didn't check prom schedules. So that was my fault. So everyone was at prom and no one was at my party. So came back the next year, did it 2 weeks earlier.
I actually want you just to rewind for a second because this is probably going to go into what we discussed just before we hit record. But was that in reference to your family and your father when you had that show? Can you discuss that a little bit? Because I know we've had some silly banter, but at the heart of the show is a solid core. I'd really like to hear about that.
Yeah, no, completely. So yeah, when I was 13, I mean, so then technically like 3 or 4 years before that. So when I was like 9 or 10, my dad was diagnosed with a T-cell lymphoma. It was a T-cell lymphocytic leukemia. So it was a kind of a leukemia, kind of a lymphoma, kind of not, I don't know. It was weird. There's only 4 cases a year of it.
Wait, 4 as in 1, 2, 3, 4? Like that, wow.
Yeah, so really, really freaking rare. And so I was like, oh, just our luck. So he battled it for years. And he was actually getting treatment up at Dana-Farber up in Boston. And I'll never forget, I was staying at the beach house down at Chalker Beach. My brother woke me up at like 2 a.m. was like, yo, we got to go up to Boston. And I was like, all right. So we went up and they basically told us, because he went up a couple days before that with a fever. Because basically he did the transplant. Everything was going good. He was coming back from it. But they basically said, like, you know, if you ever get a fever, because you have a low blood cell count right now as you build up your immune system, you know, if you ever get a fever, you got to come up to the hospital. And so he had a small fever running. So they brought him up, beat the fever. And then when he was there in the hospital, he caught a very strong strain of pneumonia just from being in the hospital. And so that's what's knocked him out. And so we got up there and they were basically like, you got like 3 hours. They were like, he's just, pneumonia's just took over. He's done. And so it technically wasn't even the cancer that he died from. It was technically pneumonia. But it was a byproduct of the, you know, cancer process. And so, yeah, after that point, I mean, I don't really remember half of it. I was probably in a fog for like 3 years.
I can relate to that. And
yeah,
we could resume this conversation. So we'll start with the heavy during the second half and then we'll get to the light. But I can tell you, I lost my dad in 2007, and there were days and weeks that are just completely blurred out. So I get it.
Yep. I think my whole freshman year was just a blur. All I really remember was like the concerts.
But that was a good positive outlet for you while you're going through the shit. Exactly. Well, that's the thing, is that music can really help you during times of happiness, amplify it, and during times of sadness to get you out of the funk. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Nick, Jed, Emily, and least importantly, Scott. All right, we're here on the second half of Waldman's Words. And Nick, let's just get right back into it. So you're going through a really rough time.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's where the companies for me have come out of it. I don't remember a day. Like, I'll never forget when I was wrapping up, the last company I was running was a marketing company, and I was at, you know, kind of at the walls with it. And I was talking to one of my friends and I was like, dude, if this fails, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was like, I don't remember a day where I haven't worked and like run my own company. Because for me, like, that was my coping mechanism. My coping mechanism was diving into my companies. Cause like my work ethic was my stability. And so like for me, the only thing I've ever had, like, so to say, that was like stable was entrepreneurship. As crazy as that sounds, because entrepreneurship is probably the most unstable thing in the universe. That was my grounding and my stability was like, okay, I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm upset, I'm just going to work my ass off for the next 15 hours and not think about it. And that was kind of, I think, what has given me this advantage, is because now for the past 10 years, I've, you know, worked without a dollar pretty much, and reinvested everything back into myself, knowledge of my career. And, you know, now it's starting to pay off because, you know, I have worked probably 12-hour days for the past 10 freaking years. Because, you know, that's what like kept me going, was just like, okay, you know, F depression, I'm just going to work my ass off. And so, you know, that came out of a lot of it. And I even talked to my mom. I was like, you know, I wouldn't be here today if that didn't happen to me, because that kicked my ass in the gear and was like, okay, Nick, you're 13, but you're a man now. You know, you got to figure your life out. And that's what really kicked me into gear, into, you know, just hustle and do things. And, you know,
well, getting- I had my bar mitzvah at 13 and I became a man like last year. So, but, So you're from Connecticut and you go to school. Are you currently a student at Bryant?
I am currently not. I am considered a dropout.
What? Say that again?
Yeah, I'm considered a dropout.
My God, I was actually going to ask about your experience there, but if you want to skip to the next question,
Dropout City, yep. Baby.
Yep, I am a part of. We will see which list I end up on. Either the long list of entrepreneurs who've dropped out and then, you know, head back to school with the tail between their legs, or the short list of entrepreneurs who dropped out and become successful, or the even shorter list of those who dropped out and become, you know, billionaires. We'll see where I end up.
Friggin' Nick Cianfione dropped out of college, dropped out of high school. Okay, I can't too.
Yeah, this guy dropped out. Everyone who drops out does well.
Let me tell you, for anybody that is anywhere in the world that may possibly stumble across this, if you're like, oh my God, I'm running a company, I want to drop out, don't. I wanted to drop out until I actually got the chance to drop out. And then I was like, I don't want to leave college. It's a little bit better now because like COVID, like college is going and like really happening, but like college is the best 4 years of your life. Like, you will never have a better 4 years than you have in college. Like, I don't care. Like, if you say like, oh my God, I'm going to be rich and successful and like buy a Lambo. Cool. That's great. But you know what's better? Being broke and dumb with six of your best friends. And just having no responsibilities.
That sounds like every metalcore band. Broken, dumb with your six best friends and no responsibility.
Yeah, man. Like, and then, like, it was big for me. Like, I dropped out and I was like, oh, fuck, I'm an adult.
Your favorite quote of the year, by the way, Jed. I just want you to know that. Like, I was really proud of that. But, Nicholas, Mr. Nick, man. You actually studied entrepreneurship and legal studies there, right? I mean, that's a very unconventional.
Ooh, you're doing some digging on me.
Yo, man, it's a fucking radio show, bastard. I got you.
Damn.
Whoa.
I got you.
Nice thing to say.
Shout out to Marilyn for making
it. Yeah.
Thanks, Marilyn.
It is pretty unconventional. That's why I took it. So, first off, I chose Bryant because the way they taught entrepreneurship was unconventional. The way they taught it was basically like, we're not going to teach you how to be an entrepreneur. They were like the first day, they were like, they asked everyone in the room that was like interested in entrepreneurship. They were like, why do you want to be an entrepreneur? And like, I'll never forget it. Someone raised their hand. He's like, because I want to work for myself. And the professor, the head of the entrepreneurship department, goes, wrong. Get out of the room. You're not an entrepreneur. He goes, if you think that entrepreneurs work for themselves, you're a dumbass. He's like, they work for the investors, the board of directors, their employees. He goes, you're not an entrepreneur. And I was like, holy shit.
That sounds like a very happy person.
Yeah.
Great guy. One of the coolest guys I've ever met. But you know, he was right. You know, they taught it in a way where it was like, we're not going to teach you how to be an entrepreneur. We're going to teach you how to, you know, succeed as an entrepreneur when you already are an entrepreneur. And it had a great, you know, a great way, you know, I wouldn't be here without that. You know, half of my investors are Bryant alumni.
You can really teach someone how to be an entrepreneur, just like you can't teach someone who can't sing how to be a good singer. You could make them,
you can make them
more knowledgeable. But
a lot of colleges, though, feed off that shark tank where they're like, oh, everyone can be an entrepreneur. We're going to teach you how to be an entrepreneur. And Bryant was like, no, we don't believe in that. And that's why I chose them. And that's why I took the entrepreneurship major, because I kind of saw the trajectory. I was like, all right, I'm going to learn how to be the best entrepreneur physically possible. And Bryant's
well, I asked every entrepreneur on the planet and you came in second place.
Yeah. Right behind that college professor.
Yep.
Now, so we've moved into the more modern era, and now we are at the Artist Republic years. How did that officially begin?
And so here's another question on that point, Jed.
Yes.
Mr. Nick, are you working hard to make sure I'ma be the man when I die?
Yes, I am. Now, the question for you is, do you know what song that's from?
Whenever I hear I'm a bee, I just think of the Black Eyed Peas, and I know that's not it.
It could be.
Nope. That song.
What is
that? That is from Opportunity Cost by G-Eazy.
Oh.
If anyone knows me, that is one of my favorite songs of all time, and I'm actually planning on getting the album name tattooed on my arm.
Okay. All right. You heard it here.
I'm cool with that. Just don't get I'm a B on your arm. That's all. That's just like, just
free. I'm a B. Yep. That's going to be.
Get a portrait of G-Eazy on your arm. That'd be sick.
Ooh, that'd be interesting. I think
of
my mom.
G-Eazy as a B saying I'm a B. But now now I will make you drop one date. When, what year did you conceive and incept Artist Republic?
2018.
Wow.
Beginning of 2018. So how it happened, I got to college and was hosting I tried to host concerts up in Providence, quickly realized that Providence venues are still run by the mafia. And I was like, okay, this is sketchy.
The Departed has that scene. Anyway, continue.
Something just connected.
You don't normally associate, like, on the West Coast, like, Providence with anything but Chowda and Brown University. So, anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a huge mafia town still. And so
congratulations.
I got out of yes, I thought I was going to be in safe company. I was like, huh, I wonder who I can drop my name to. So I got out of that, and one of my buddies from Boston who runs a nightclub up there reached out to me. He was like, hey, you used to have a really interesting way of growing your Instagram accounts for your concerts. He's like, now you're not doing concerts, you want to do it for me? And I was like, sure, why not? And so he pretty much introduced me to everyone. Little did I know how much money was in Instagram growth. So I started running a unique Instagram growth company because I had this insane bot that was basically the most accurate bot you could ever have for targeting someone's behaviors on Instagram. And we'd use it to sell concert tickets. And so I started doing it for a couple clubs up in Boston. I started doing it for state representatives. Before we knew it, we sunk a contract with People on America's Got Talent. And it was this huge 6 month just growth. And I was like, holy crap. Within 6 months, we had over 500 clients on our client list. And
hold up. That's insane, dude. Damn.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Went to your teacher at Bryant and went, how do you like them apples, and ran away.
And literally at that point at Bryant, I was taking classes Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and I was on sales calls 12 hours a day. I would do a sales call every 15 minutes for 12 hours on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, just knocking out clients. It would take me 8 minutes to sell someone on our Instagram growth tool. It was freaking insane. But at that point, when I was talking to these guys, because I was talking to so many artists, I started to realize how screwed up the industry was. And, you know, the problem was that now I was working with these guys, I was running their marketing, and they were coming to me and they're like, okay, you know, you're doing my marketing and I love you for doing my marketing, but, you know, can you help me with this or can you help me with that? But $120 a month for their marketing was like the max that they could pay. Like, they didn't want to pay more than that. Like, they couldn't afford more than that, but they were still really talented. They just didn't have the money and the resources. And so I sat down with one of my mentors and I was like, hey, here's the problem I'm facing. I was like, these artists need the resources. I know where I can get the resources. I can be their manager. I can, you know, do this so easily, but they can't afford it. And I was like, I'm making money hand over fist. You know, I can maybe manage 5 guys effectively. I can't charge them $120 a month. I go, I'm making boatloads of cash. Why would I spend 40 hours a week working on 5 guys to make $500 a month? I was like, it doesn't make sense. And that's when he sat down with me and he was like, okay, walk me through the management cycle. And we started walking through booking agent cycle, record label cycle, management cycle, connecting, networking, everything. He goes, Nick, you just built yourself an automated platform on the whiteboard. And I sat back and I was like, holy shit, you're right. And boom. So that's when I started diving into, okay, everything in the industry can be automated to some extent through programmatic and AI languages. It just needs to be done correctly. And if you do that and you remove the human from the equation, the resources become cheap as shit. And I was like, wow. And I mean, a perfect example of this is I have a buddy that helps people do Instagram marketing, like get reposts on famous Instagram pages. He charges $3,000 to get posted on 10 famous accounts. Now, we have an Instagram tool in Artist Public that does the same exact thing. To get posted on 10 accounts, it'll cost you $500. Why? Because you're not paying him to broker your deal.
Yeah.
And it's, that's where Artist Public came in.
It's like the music equivalent to the like Amazon delivery robots and all of that too. Like at a certain point, like humans don't need to touch anything.
Yes.
They just need to continue to make the art until humans don't even need to be there to make the art because you got an AI doing it.
I can't wait till robots can record their first original song.
Oh, yeah. They have.
I thought you were going to say podcast because I would totally listen to an all robots podcast.
We did an all robots podcast to Waldman's Words.
Oh, that's right.
No, well, we didn't.
No, we didn't. But maybe you can attest to something Emily just said, which is it's also kind of like how self-driving cars are quickly becoming way better drivers than real humans. We went from not trusting them at all to them being outperforming us like crazy. Is that something you're seeing?
Hmm.
How well do the bots perform against people?
Oh, well, so that's what's interesting. Artist Republic is not only bots. We have a 12-person team behind the platform. So we're still running.
The dirty dozen.
Sorry. We're still running, you know, some of it by humans. It's just done on a mass scale. So, you know, we can have one human technically be the manager for 80,000 people on our network because their requests and their flows are done automated. But, you know, we're still getting those Instagram pages on the network. We're still getting those curators. We're still doing that humanly. And it's still working through humans. It's just the middleman becomes the platform and we become the middleman providers for connecting those deals. So it's never fully automated and it's never fully human. It's kind of the, you know, the perfect mix in between.
I mean, the industry and like the way that it works, it's all strategy. And there's no reason you can't teach a bot or AI strategy. So I could see how it like makes sense. Like think of all the robots that beat people in chess. Where it's like if you here's your element, here's what we're working with, here's the goal. Take the human element out of there, it's going to work a lot like smoother and quicker and easier.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, we're coming up in the modern ages. And when you finally told me what date some of this was going down, you made me realize you're young as fuck. Man, you are crushing the game to be at this point at your age.
Wait, are you 21 or 22?
I turned 22 in a week and a half.
You should shut the fuck up. And
he'll be 22.
Damn it. Well, happy birthday to you, you young son of a bitch. No, I'm happy that you were able to leverage this. You know, I think it's interesting when people take what they were doing in high school and really leverage it. And, you know, when you're a rock star like Scott Waldman, that makes a little bit more sense. And
for
if you're homeschooled like Emily, it doesn't. But walk us up to an average week in the life of Artist Republic pre-2020. I want to get a pre and post so that we can talk about how what you're actually doing today. But like end of 2019, beginning of 2020, walk us through like a week and what you guys are doing.
Prior to March 2020, Artist Republic was a shit show. I am not a developer. I am not a technology person. I am slowly becoming a technology person every day. I hired in late 2018, my first development agency. It took them 9 fucking months to build me a landing page.
Wow.
Because there was so much time wasted on BS and ideation and graphic design, and it was bullshit. And so I lost like $4,000 with them, and I was like, fuck, okay. But mainly I lost time. Went hired another development agency. The guy was out of Boston. They were located in Serbia. Hired them. He put 4 senior developers on it. Hammered out a landing page and the first mock of the website in 2 weeks, and it was awesome. paid them then the next 10 grand to build Milestone 2. Milestone 2 was then, little did I know, pushed off to the basic developers. That then was backdated 3 months, put me at December 20th of 2019. I got delivered a product on December 20th that was smoke and mirrors. It was all front end. It had no functionality. It didn't work. At this time, I knew a kid at Bryant who was an expert developer. I had him and this other lady who was a front end developer. We basically started rebuild of the whole platform on December 21st. And on January 13th, we launched the alpha test of the platform. So that was the most basic version of the platform. We then went through a shit show because my lead developer at the time stepped away from the company. He was going to be graduating. He's like, I can't take a risk on a startup. He bounced. He accepted a job in another company. And that same week, I had to meet with our first investor. So I had to walk into an investor meeting the first week of March and basically convince this investor why he should invest in us, not just because of the company, but because we just lost our senior developer. Our backup senior developer is in the hospital with COVID. And the only developer we had working was a front-end developer. It was a shit show.
You know that emoji where the guy's head's exploding?
Yes.
That just happened.
Those were many nights where I literally just sat at my desk for like 3 hours just staring at my screen, just being like, it's over. Like, it's done. Like, I tried. I tried. It's fucked.
Wait, and, I have a question, though. Why is the K, is it pronounced Republic or the fancy way that Jed sang Republic, or is it Republic, right?
It is Republic, yeah.
So what is the K for? Are you guys just so fucking bad?
Two reasons. One, we thought it looked aesthetically more pleasing. And two, artistrepublicwithak.com was $11.99 on GoDaddy when artistrepublic with a C was $5,000. We do own all Artists Republic domains now.
Yeah.
Even with a C.
So don't even try, people.
Don't even try, people. We've also trademarked Artists Republic with a K.
Yeah. So don't make him sick GoDaddy on you.
Have you ever really tried to change the last spelling of your name? So like it's not a C, it's a K, just to be on brand. Oh,
bro, you totally could.
Yeah, but that'd be more like Canfioni.
True. Well, just tell people. Just no, you're the artist formerly known as.
I mean, Nick already has a K in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, true.
But that's crazy. So beginning of March, you were at the investors point, you were like, all right, we're gonna grow real big. It's March 2020. No, we got big plans.
Basically, beginning of March was, we're gonna die if we don't get
corona.
Everyone, the beginning of March was like, we're gonna die.
Yes, but no, it was basically like, we're gonna die if we don't get enough money to hire the correct team. Because my senior developer when he started was equity, and now I lost that person, so I was like, I don't have a free developer anymore. I need money. And at this point, I already drained all my money I made from the marketing company. And so I was like, we're fucked. Like, we literally don't have money. And so I connected with this guy who was a Bryant alumni. He reached out to me. And so I met with him up in New Hampshire. And, you know, the whole meeting, I left and I called my brother. I was like, dude, I don't think we got it. And you know, both my brothers who invested up until this point, and they were like, we'll figure it out. Like, we'll figure out how to get you cash. Like, you know, because they believed in it. They were like, Nick, this is a $1 billion idea. Like, we'll figure out how to float you. 2 weeks later, during COVID, I was door dashing for side cash. And I was in the middle of running DoorDash. I'll never forget. I was picking up a pizza from some pizza place, and the investor called me and he's like, I'm in. He's like, I'll give you 50 grand in a month. Prove me what you can do. And
hell yeah.
We basically hammered it out in a month. I hired a full team. We hired 8 guys, hammered it the fuck out, and came back the beginning of end of April, and basically said, hey, here's your demo. And he goes, you guys fucking killed it. He goes, I'm gonna make you into a $1 billion company. And starting end of May, he led us through a seed round. We closed a seed round in 2 weeks. We raised 640,000. and the company was valued at $5 million. And Whoa! So at that point, we basically went from the second week of March to me door dashing to the first week of June to my company being valued at $5 million. I was like, holy shit. Yeah.
Crazy.
I think that's a really good note to leave on because because we've had many people on the show at this point. We're in like your episode's probably gonna be close to 210th episode or like maybe 207 or what have you. And we've had people who are very successful on the show basically contemplating quitting just before they broke or working a job, you know, before, because you're young as fuck, before DoorDash was an option, like being a server or a barista, and they believed in, you know, their passion and their planning and it worked out. And you're one of those success stories. So if you can leave us right now with an adjective to describe the past 50-ish minutes of your life and then your socials, we'll be done.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, Artist Republic's been a hell of a ride, and I think my adjective is failure.
I'm talking about being on this show, so thanks a lot for that.
I thought you were talking about like a motivational adjective. I was going to be like failure, because I believe everything I've succeeded has come from failure.
Yeah, as we've heard.
Adjective about this show, whirlwind. That's what I'm gonna go with. Whirlwind.
I relate more to failure, but I'll take whirlwind.
You guys might want to go to failurewhirlwind.com before Nick buys it up.
Yeah, you do. You may want to. I'm gonna go purchase that on GoDaddy. It's probably $11.99.
Failure Whirlwind with two D's at the end.
You better watch out. I purchase a lot of. I think I have like 35 domains in my GoDaddy account. I purchase a lot of domains. I just buy them up. I come up with an idea and I buy all the domains.
It's not a bad idea. No. But on that note, where can we find you on the socials?
You can find me. I was going to say, maybe I should buy nickchampioni.com. You can find me on nickchampioni.com. No, you can find me on Chalker Beach Boy on Instagram. You can find us at Artist Republic with a K on everything. And I don't really have any other personal socials besides Instagram. I like to keep it kind of low key. That's me.
All right. Well, that's it. You can find Waldman's Words everywhere at Waldman's Words. You can find Jed at Jed Fuchs, Scott at Scott Lewis Waldman, but at Lido Beach on Twitter. I'm at Emily Burke with an E. Figure out where the E is. And you can listen to Waldman's Words every single Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, which hopefully you are doing right now live. Or if you want to listen to this episode or any episode we have done before this one, you can listen to the podcast versions on Spotify, iTunes, IW.com, and your Amazon smart home that we're not going to say out loud. Boom. That's it. That's my spiel.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Waldman's Words. Thank you to Nick Cianfione. Thanks for coming on, bud.
Thank you.